shots. Camera. Action. Hey, where's the mullet? Where is he? Is he coming in by chopper again?
And now, live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, it's time again for your dose of action cinema history from the 80s, 90s, and beyond with the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
Oh, g'day, mate. How you going? G'day, mate, and welcome to the Lethal Mullet Podcast. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien, and from here, Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, at the home of the Lethal Mullet Network, we bring you the Lethal Mullet Podcast, episode number 140, and one of many I'm recording tonight as we head into our slumber mode of summer, where basically we've got a lot of episodes backed up, ones that I've been trying to get out for a little while, and basically these are going to cover some films which we've always talked about doing. Particularly with tonight's episode, episode number 140, looking at, of course, Arnold Schwarzenegger's The Commando. That's right, Commando from back in 1985. It's his answer to, of course, Rambo in some ways, even better. John Rambo and John Matrix have always been toe-to-toe when it comes to movie box offices, stuff like that. John Matrix, one of the quintessential Arnold Schwarzenegger roles, and certainly one with an army of one-liners, as I said in the blurb that I put out for the podcast with the podcast art. It's a great film. It's got great villains, great action. And we're going to get into that tonight. Coming up also in the next couple of episodes, we're going to be looking at a deep look into Salute of the Jugger. Of course, Blood of Heroes, known in the States as that. And it's a great film. It's a football film from the future, The Wastelands, from the Mad Max sort of era. Even has some Mad Max stars in it as well. We're going to get into that one. Also, as we mentioned, we're doing Jackie Chan's First Strike, which is going to be a lot of fun. I mean, a lot of people sort of haven't had a chance to really see that. Then there's a little known one starring Martin Cove, Sensei Kreese, called Steel Justice. Yes, those four films, folks, are going to be going, along with, of course, Thomasine Griffith's Ulterior Motives, which is the second of the Thomasine Griffith movies that we're going to be covering in homage to, obviously, this great actor that's come out of retirement to play Terry Silver in Cobra Kai Season 4. All right, we'll get into it very shortly, just after these messages. G'day, mate. How you going? Welcome to the Lethal Mullet Network, where you'll find all these amazing shows and more. Where you'll find the Lethal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of action cinema from the 80s, 90s, and beyond. You'll also find Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast, where I'm joined by my amazing co-host, Mark Newbold, into a deep dive of Star Trek. You'll also find Mullet and Kilt, a look at music, where I'm joined by my dear pal, Darth Elvis, and where you can also find the Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe. All here on, of course, lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on your favourite podcatcher. You can find us there. You can also find all these shows a week later on, of course, the one, the only Fandom Podcast Network, FPN, on fpnet.podbean.com. Don't forget to also follow us on socials. There's, of course, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at the handle at the Lethal Mullet. We'll catch you out there and enjoy your action cinema.
Hi. Mate, how you going? Come on in, mate. Yeah. What shall it be?
Oh, yeah. Man, it's been real busy, B, you know? Wow.
Right, mate.
Yeah.
Just like I was telling my mate the other day, have a nice, cold beverage.
Well, here you go, mate. Here, enjoy this beverage and enjoy this film chat. Yep, folks, we're getting straight into this one. Directed by Mark Lester. Yeah, so Mark Lester, what's he done? Well, Mark L. Lester has done Class of 1984, Showdown in Little Tokyo, Firestarter, Armed and Dangerous, Class of 1999. See, he did his one sequel at least. Poseidon Rex and Night of the Running Man. Yeah, with Scott Glenn. So you can tell this is a man that knows his action. And he certainly knows how to get some really, really interesting ones out there without a doubt. And tonight we're going to be talking about that one. This is about a Black Ops commando, part of a Black Ops outfit that's been disbanded and gone into retirement, John Matrix. He and his daughter are living out in a nice little place out in the bush. And all of a sudden, Jenny, his daughter, is kidnapped by a band of thugs, terrorists, whichever you name it, people that he's wronged when he was a Black Ops commando. He's only got a few hours to find and rescue his daughter. And, of course, sets out on a massive mission to take out the bad guys, rescue his daughter, and, of course, seek justice for all. This is a great film. It's bang for buck, gives you exactly what you've done. Music by James Horner, folks. So you see, you got some big, big ones on this one. Starring, of course, Arnold as John Matrix in the quintessential role that he, you know, really, this is tailor-made for Arnold, you know. All the one-liners, all the quips that he's always done as a bodybuilder, as Conan the Barbarian. And, of course, you know, going into this one, he really played on that too. Alyssa Milano in one of her first roles as Jenny Matrix, and she's great in this. She's even, as a character in this, the character, outsmarts most of the bad guys in it too. Great role for a child actor. Ray Dawn Chong as Cindy, and she's great in this. Ray Dawn Chong, you know, not a love interest. She's actually committed to, once she gets over the fact that she's basically been, kidnapped herself, she then sees what's happening with John and sympathizes and really gets with the way of things and gets some great scenes in this, particularly with a certain rocket launcher. We've got Vernon Wells from, of course, a lot of Aussie films, folks, and, of course, Mad Max 2, where he played the Mohawk bad guy. And obviously, he's really good at these sorts of, villainous roles. Bennett's probably his best, without a doubt. It's most iconic, and, you know, he's playing it as an Aussie commando, basically, that's going on the wrong side of the law, if you like. Alongside it, Dan Hedaya is Arius in this, the leader pretty much of the bad guys, ones that has obviously come across John Matrix in the past, and it's been kind of a, you know, Dan plays it quite well, very stoic but corrupt, official from Valverde, which is not a real South American country. It was made up one for films, and I don't know if they just used it in this one, but it's definitely meant to be some type of country down, and but without naming it, they just basically said, we're going to come up with one. We call it Valverde. So Dan plays pretty much the commander of that group. We've got Cook, played by Bill Duke. Not only a fantastic actor, obviously we know him from other roles like in, obviously, Predator. But in this one, Bill's great because he gets some great lines with Arnold, but also gets action as well. And he's really fantastic talent, always has been. The explosive David Patrick Kelly as Sully in this. And it, I mean, if you guys know Sully, you know, I had to let him go. You know, he gets probably one of the more infamous deaths in this one too. It's quite funny. James Olsen as Major General Franklin Kirby. Yep. That's right. The one that Arnold has to basically say, no, I'm not joining you again, General. That's enough for me. I'm retired. One of those classic ones. And again, he's quite good in this. You know, I've seen him in some TV stuff as well as some other movies, but James Olsen as this kind of, you can't quite see him as the commander of Arnold, but you can at the same time. It's interesting. Chelsea Field is in this as well. As one of the stewards on the plane that Arnold is on his way to Valverde, but he doesn't quite make it. And we also have, believe it or not, Bill Paxton in this one as well. That's right. Bill Paxton plays an intercept officer in it, you know, when they're basically finding, I do believe it was a, when the seaplane takes off, and they're told that they're basically not allowed to leave. Also, we got Branscombe Richmond. Obviously, you'll know him from Renegade and many others. He plays Vega in this, and it's a blink or you miss it role. It's very quick in one of the many people that Arnie takes out as he's trying to plan his way through places as well. This is just one of those amazing films that just happened to have great actors at the right time. And I think, you know, it came out here in 86 in Australia, but it was out in 85 everywhere else in the world from what I remember. Again,
Australian distributors, folks. In the 1980s, we didn't care too much when they got things from overseas. We just put on VHS and let them have it. That's what we do because we're Australian distributors. Yes. No. we always got things a little bit later. But it got better towards the 90s. I will give it that. So not by much. So that's pretty much your cast, and it's a strong cast. Obviously, this is a film which was pretty much tailor-made for the sort of style that Arnold has, and it's very over-the-top action, without a doubt. This is not the kind of action that is realistic by a long shot. There's no way you could class it as that. But let's get a little feel for the plot here. Let's get a little feel of where things are going. As the film opens, we have General Franklin Kirby coming around to find John Matrix as he's retired into a nice little place, like a cabin in the woods kind of thing. And Franklin, after we get a little bit of a prologue, lets him know that all the members of his former team, of his unit, have been killed by an unknown group of thugs, mercenaries. They're not sure. These thugs are all mercenaries belonging to Bennett, who's an Australian ex-commando, that was part of Matrix's group, but was discharged. He was discharged because of his excessive, horrific violence and stuff like that. He was not somebody to be trusted, and certainly wasn't one that would work alongside how Matrix wanted, as Matrix was the commander. After being discharged, he joins a South American dictator by the name of Arias. He's a commander of a group, and basically he becomes his henchman, if you like. So he's got it in for, of course, Matrix, and he devises a plan that will basically put Arias, a former dictator, back into power, because he was removed from power by Matrix. So Arias plans to blackmail John Matrix into carrying out a political assassination, and that way remove his chances of the people that are currently in power to stay in there. And, of course, he then will become the lead of his home country of Valverde. So from here, they kidnap Jenny in a pretty elaborate sequence where we get to see John Matrix break away from the teams and obviously show how much better he is than the guards that Franklin Kirby leaves behind. This is a great scene because we get to see Arnold not only going into his armory, which is just filled with as much guns as the gun store we're going to see later in the film. If there's something in there, they're all in there pretty much. From here, we get to see, obviously, the character of Jenny get taken by Bennett and the thugs and kidnapped. And, of course, Arnold is in hot pursuit. He has a great scene where he gets his now basically uncontrollable car, because it's a big F-100 that's had all the spark plugs and stuff and cording ripped out. So he has to use it with just basically no brakes, no nothing, and find his way down a hill to chase after, of course, the group that have taken his daughter. And it's great. Again, this is one of the things Marco List is so great with. We get to see, the fury and the power of basically an out-of-control truck with no engine power, no brakes, and it basically collides with the van as it goes down the road. From this scene, you get to see some great stunt work by Arnold getting down on the ground and literally just throwing people around, kicking them. There's quite a bit of throwing in this one. Judo must have been the thing. And, of course, Arnold's classic, his version of classic martial arts, basically, chopping, breaking arms and elbows, which increases as we get through his films to Total Recall, where you actually start to hear that breaking of bones. And it was always, it's a sound, but it's very visual in your mind when you hear it. From here, we get to see them overpower, obviously, Arnold. And I do believe we do see Svenol Thorsen in one of those scenes there, too. Again, he's always hanging around Arnold and the gym, as they do. And, of course, you know, when the two of them are around, you're always bound to find some work done. From here, we get to see Matrix taken to a little sell away, where they basically put him in a room with everybody. And I do mean everybody. All of the villains he's going to be literally knocking off left, right, and center for the next 60 minutes of the movie. But, of course, you've got to have your big James Bond-style reveal to the character before all the stuff happens. Because, again, they don't expect it to go wrong. Of course, they think that it's all going to be right. Dan Hedaya pretty much rules the scene. And he really eats up all the scenery by doing a fantastic scene as Arias going through all the different stuff that he's going to do to get him back in power in Valverde. And I've always loved Dan Hedaya. He's got a certain power about him, which always does well. I think, actually, one of his best roles is Alien Resurrection, where he's just a, you know, pretty much a factory-level colonel wanting to get his day done, but, of course, the Xenomorphs come on the ships and really ruin his day. In this one, we get to see a bit of that, and, of course, they do believe that Matrix is going to go along with the plan. Arnold, stoic as ever, still gets one-liners here and there through that sequence. But then is taken to be put on a plane for, of course, going to Valverde and taking out the current dictator. So this is undoing a mission that John Matrix did much earlier, where basically it's the opposite. But now, with Bennett involved, things will go a little bit different, I think. And that's how it's going in John Matrix's mind. From here, we get to see that. We also get to see the great scene as they're heading to the plane where he says to Bennett, "I'll be back." "I'll be ready, John." That real Aussie voice. You're going to say it's an interesting look. There's a very Freddie Mercury sort of look about him, particularly with the outfit and the moustache in this, which is a little bit different for Vernon. But he's great in this. He's fantastic. So if you're out there, Vernon, mate, you're a champion. We want to see you in the next Mad Max or Furiosa in some role. From here, we get to see, obviously, Arnold on the plane. We get to see Chelsea Field in this one as well. From here, it's an interesting scene where he's trying to find his way off the plane without making too much of a muckus, and obviously takes out his adversary very quickly and leaves him sitting basically on a pillow and says, "Don't disturb my friend, he's dead tired." Great scene. Then, of course, he's got to find his way off the plane. And he says to the stewardess, "I'm air sick." Which is great. And then finds his way down to the legs of the plane as the plane's taking off. And it gets airborne, but he jumps literally directly into the swamp below. And Arnold sets the timer on his watch, of course, realizes he's got only so much time to get to Jenny and to save, obviously, his daughter's life. From here, we get to see him work his way through each of the villains to get a piece of them and, obviously, an idea where to go to find Jenny and, of course, find, Arias and, of course, Bennett. Each one of them is knocked off with precision. Each one knocked off with the style that only Arnie knows best. And, of course, we get along the way, we meet Ray Dawn Chong's character as well, who really becomes an integral part of the story. She's great because she not only sees what's going on at first as a kidnapping, she sees it as, it's going to be obviously a horror to her own life. But then she realizes that, hey, maybe there's a bit more to this and decides to actually help John Matrix. And she gets some really funny lines herself in this too. Obviously, David Patrick Kelly has some scenes with her early on too and just basically gets told to go jump very quickly. So Sully cops it from all sides and this is pretty funny. Then we see, obviously, the great scene where he goes, "I got to go shopping." Now, although he does get into Jews what guns he wants and loads up a truck with them, he then gets, obviously, picked up by the police and they throw him in the back of the wagon and take him away. Ray Dawn Chong's character then picks up, of course, on this and drives a car right next to the truck, flirts a bit with the police, and then as they're taken off, pulls out a rocket launcher, first fires it backwards, then turns it around and, of course, takes out the wheelbase of the truck as well and gets John Matrix free. So again, and she gets some great lines in that one too. After this, obviously, they get on the seaplane, and with her at the pilot seat, Ray takes them over to, obviously, the island. From here, John Matrix grabs himself a little paddle boat and heads over with, of course, an arsenal, platoons worth of armory on him. From here, he starts from one side of the island and goes to the other and basically takes out everybody, Bennett and, of course, Arias included. This is one of those classic Rambo-style knockoffs where Arnie is only ever wounded, only just slightly. So, you know, he is fragile to a certain degree. It was just a flesh wound. But, of course, he finds his way through and, of course, saves his daughter's life. And, of course, he does the one thing he always wanted to do, threw a pipe at Bennett. And Bennett gets smashed up against a wall next to a place that blows out some steam. And he goes, "Let off some steam, Bennett." So, how'd this movie all come together? Well, Jeff Loeb, who would obviously go on to become an amazing comic writer in his own right afterwards, said the idea was about originally an Israeli soldier who had renounced violence. But then, of course, Stephen DeSouza came along, and of course, when Stephen DeSouza rewrote the script, he basically had to mold it into something that would resemble Arnold Schwarzenegger's ideas. From here, we've got, obviously, the casting came about really strongly, where Michael Lester really wanted somebody that could only be as strong as Arnold, but who really could match Arnold in any way. And, of course, after watching Mad Max 2, he said Vernon Wells was the first and only choice for Captain Bennett. From there on, obviously, and he basically said that Bennett was in love with Matrix, but he hated him too. He wanted to kill him, but he also was in love with him. So you can kind of see it's basically been a 2IC, a second in command in the group who had a falling out, and, you know, from there it basically just, you know, fell away from him. And I think that's, you know, that's been in a lot of different situations. It's been like that. Where you see, you know, two leaders basically not seeing eye to eye, and they still care about each other to a certain degree. Photography, the principal photography started on 22nd of April 1985. Went for a little over a month and shot in California and San Nicolas Island off the coast of Santa Barbara. Hey, Raider Nerd, there you go. It was close to where you live, buddy. There you go. And that's basically where John Matrix flies over with, obviously, with his helm and goes over to rescue Jenny. And that was filmed on the Pacific coast of San Simeon. There you go. Different location too. Now, the barracks that are taken out are part of Hearst Castle Estate. There you go. You can actually check some of this on Google Maps, folks. You can actually see some of this stuff. Which is always interesting when you're looking at locations. You can see what they look like now instead. And also the main residence of Arias was at the Harold Lloyd Estate in Benedict Canyon. And this is, of course, part of Beverly Hills. Now, I do believe that may have also been the place that they shot the end of Beverly Hills Cop, number one. Interesting. What else have we got? Also, the car chase between Sully and Matrix went from Ventura Boulevard and all the way up to the hills in Benedict Canyon. Interesting. And Sherman Oaks was the shopping mall location as well. And, of course, that was quite a big punch-up in that one too. Some great scenes in that too. I really enjoyed particularly that part of it. It's because we're getting to start to see Arnold's character kind of think. It's kind of like John McClane to a certain degree, but just on steroids. but look, I think a lot of the locations look great. And they were chosen well. They were used wisely by Mark Lester. And again, we're getting to see quintessential Arnold being made at that point. And folks, it was awesome.
Guns, guns, guns. Everybody's got guns.
All right, thanks, Arnold. Well, what movie guns are we going to be seeing in this one? Well, we've got a huge amount, folks. So, right at the start of the film, Arnold Schwarzenegger's character, John Matrix, picks up a Beretta 92 from his little arsenal. And, of course, he holds that along with a HK-91 assault rifle, which he's basically picks up at the start there. He also uses the pistol a little bit later, a Desert Eagle Mark I. And, of course, this is when he takes on Ares's mansion and the thousands of people involved in it. Later on, he also basically picks up a Colt Combat Commander Series 70. That's when he basically goes up to Franklin Kirby, goes, "Hey, Mr. Franklin Kirby, this is your gun, right?" "No." He's also got an M1911 that he takes off somebody at one stage there. And, of course, we get to see a little bit later, picking up a Detonix Scoremaster, one that's pretty much used in Terminator 2 as well by Arnold, which is a slick 45 knockoff. That's used by Bennett. There's also a Combat Master used in it, as well as a Smith & Wesson Model 15, and there's a variety of revolvers. Now we get to the fun stuff. Arnold uses in this one an Uzi 9mm. Of course, we get to see this a couple of times, not only at the Ares Mansion part, but you get to see him using it to defeat, obviously, to the people knocking down at the seaplane area. We get to see a couple of MAC-10s in this as well. At the start, when Cook takes out one of the many people in his team. We get the HK-94A3, that's used by some of the people in Ares' mansion. We get a lot of MP5s and also HK-94 chopped and converted. These are ones that are used to basically look like MP5s for full auto versions. I think at the time, because MP5s were just so hard to come by the movie people at the time. Hackler & Koch HK-91A2. This is a big, big rifle, folks. Pretty much the HK equivalent of the FN Fell, or the SLR as we know here in Australia. 7.62mm NATO standard weapon. So it packs a punch, puts the person down. M16A1's used at the start too against Arnold's people. And of course, he uses it himself at Ares' mansion, which is interesting. And we've also got some SP1s. The Colt SP1 is basically what they used in place of the M16s and that. We've got M16 with A2 handguards in some scenes. Of course, that's because the armed forces at the time had actually converted to a new M16A2, which was different grips. You can see the same one used by Sonny in Predator with his over and under shotgun kit there too. We get to see more M16s. We also get the CAR-15 used by the special ops troops that are Rangers most likely, and they're basically with Franklin Kirby at the start there too. A couple of Ruger Mini 14s we get to see, used by the other troops. Steyr AUG used by, of course, Arius, known out here in Australia as the F-88 Steyr, and of course we've got the new F-90, I think it is. It's out now too. Lots of AKMs, but then we get to the fun stuff, shotguns. Remington 870 used by Arnold himself a few times there too. We get to see Arnold using that quite well, quite effectively too. There's Mossberg's used by the police, and of course a Franchi Spaz 12. Now this is one Arnold knows well because he used it in Terminator, folks, as well. Machine guns. We have the Valmet M78-83 used by Arnie, and of course it's got a big fat scope on it as well. Basically, it's an RPK, if you like, and a very similar appearance one to it, and of course it's a Finnish weapon. But it looks more like a sniper rifle than a heavy machine gun, but is a long-range machine gun. Then we also have Arnold do basically a whole series of gardening for them with an M60E3. Same one used by Rambo, and I do believe that was to poke fun at Stallone. We also get to see the classic M60 used by Arius's men and a few others there too. And of course, we get to see the M202 Flash, and this is a prop version, used by Cindy, which is Ray Dawn Chong's character, but also used by Arnold later on when he reloads it and basically uses it against all the troops. And again, very, very interesting one to be used. It's kind of a rocket launcher with four explosive parts there too. We get a fake M203 grenade launcher set up on one of the many firearms used in it. And funny that Arnold would use the real McCoy in Predator only a couple of years later too. We also got a Palmer Capture short-range projector. And this one was used to basically fire the darts that Bennett would use later on as well too. So very, very interesting array of firearms in this one too. As obviously, you know, this is the quintessential Arnie movie when it comes to the numbers too. The amount of people that he knocks off in this film was just 86 or something like that. It's a huge amount. It certainly gives Rambo a run for his money. So obviously music in this is quite interesting, and it's certainly James Horner doing it. So it's a classic Horner score for the action beats of the film. You get that classic sort of steel drum sort of feel, the sort of crystal shard sound to the main thing, which, you know, it's a din 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 sort of sound, and it's really for Horner stuff, it's quite different but classic at the same time. For Arnold, it's perfect. So, where does this film sit on the Hallenbach scale, folks? This is a 4.75 out of 5. It's quite up there. Definitely, I think, one of Arnold's strongest films. You know, it's right up there with Conan, right up there with the original Terminator, and Total Recall. It's hard to beat this film. I mean, Predator's up there as well, but this film fires on all cylinders. This is quintessential Arnold Schwarzenegger.
G'day, folks. Hope you're enjoying the great shows here on the Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to check out all the great shows that we have on offer and subscribe on the master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. You can check Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Rysel and Lee Fillingsus on their platform. You can also check out Culture Clash, which is the weekly look at pop culture hosted by Kevin and Kyle. Couch Potato Theatre, this is a cult classics and guilty pleasure podcast. Also Time Warp, a fandom flashback show. End Zone, a look at the NFL, the American football. Also Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, looking at the great films of Alfred Hitchcock. Union Federation podcast, a Star Trek and Orville podcast, looking at Discovery, and of course Picard, plus the Orville. Also the Hair Metal podcast, looking at the great shows put on by the amazing bands back in the late 80s, their discs, their LPs, everything, all covering the fashion as well. Hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Rysel. You can also check out Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, hosted by Kevin and Dan Hadley, looking at all the eras of Doctor Who. You can also catch out What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, an amazing show looking at Star Wars, hosted by Derek and Scott. And of course, our newest one, the amazing, The Mullet Guild, an offshoot of the Lethal Mullet podcast looking at Frank Herbert's Dune universe. This is like an encyclopedia for Dune, where I take you through and down into the rabbit hole of Frank Herbert's amazing space opera, the sprawling universe which is going to be brought to life by Denis Villeneuve and December 18. You can check out all the shows there. Be sure to also go onto the social platforms on Twitter at FanPod Network. Let us know what you think of the shows and what else you can look at there. You can also check out great articles that we put up through there that we share. Also check out on Instagram and Facebook, Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to make sure that every Tuesday you check out the great work done by Making Treks as well. A brand new podcast looking at a deep dive of Star Trek, hosted by myself, James Semple, and of course, the ever popular and amazing writer of Star Trek and Star Wars, Mark Newbold. Go and check it out, folks, and we'll catch you next time here on the Phantom Podcast Network's The Lethal Mullet Podcast. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.